You're listening to IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service. Welcome to the reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for today, October 25th, 2021. Support for this reading comes from the Dupaco R. W. Heffer Foundation. And I'm Marge.
And Helen.
And here is our first story.
The final say. Funeral practices offer options for the deceased and bereaved. Death might be a constant in life, but the rituals, traditions, and practices that people turn in the immediate aftermath of a loss are changing. Compared to a generation ago, more and more people are planning their own funerals. Cremation is on the rise. The term celebration of life has entered the lexicon. The funeral profession is always evolving, said funeral director Patrick Leonard of Leonard Funeral Home and Crematory in Dubuque and a former president of Iowa Funeral Directors Association. The National Funeral Directors Association has identified several current trends in the funeral industry, including personalized funerals, advanced planning, the rise of cremation, the use of technology for live streaming, and memorial videos. All of these trends have been seen in the tri-state area. Honoring the dead. The most obvious changes in the funeral industry relate to the disposition or what is done with a body after death. In Dubuque, burial long has been the most frequent method. But now people are looking beyond the traditional burial, increasingly opting for cremation, natural burials without embalming, or donating their burials to science. Patrick Leonard, Home and Funeral and Crematory in 1999, after more than 10 years working at other local funeral homes, in 2000, the business opened a crematory. Leonard estimates that at the start of his career, only 5% of the deaths that he dealt with included cremation. Nowadays, it's 30% to 40%. Many other local funeral homes have expanded in the same way. Tom Siegert has been a funeral director at Eaglehoff, Siegert, and Casper Funeral Home since 1985, and they added a crematory a decade ago, and demand is still rising. In 2018, Jason Schumacher opened a Tri-State Cremation Center in East Dubuque, Illinois. Schumacher has been in the funeral industry for two decades and has seen the shift. One misconception, the funeral directors say, is that those who choose cremation can't have a funeral or a memorial service. Though direct cremation is an option, most who are cremated still are honored with some sort of service. In fact, one constant, despite emerging trends and shifts in traditions, is a desire for friends and loved ones to come together after a loss. The one thing I think will never change is these things are meant to be a recognition of a life that was lived, Siegert says. At the beginning of Leonard's and Siegert's careers, most funerals follow the same pattern. When I started in the late 80s, it was still what I would call a very traditional funeral around Dubuque, Leonard said. When someone died, the family would arrange a visitation, funeral service, and burial. The majority of those services were religious and often held at a place of worship. Many families often arrange vigils or rosaries. Military service and group affiliations often come into play. When a veteran dies, they are accorded military services. Organizations such as the Knights of Columbus or Catholic Daughters of America have their own rituals. Colleagues often come out in force for funerals. Firefighters, for example, have bell ringing ceremonies. But Leonard and Schumacher said the emphasis of religion appears to be decreasing. Some people are doing more of a humanistic type service where they're not involving a lot of things to do with church or religion, Leonard said. Siegert said that over time, the focus has switched to unique and personalized services. When we sit down with a family to make arrangements, we ask, what are you looking for? What type of person was he or she, Siegert says. What we try to do is make each visitation unique and more personal, Siegert said. I think if we accomplish that, we get more out of it. A personal business. An unavoidable quirk of the funeral industry is that those who work in it intimately understand the situations faced by their clients. Lerner doesn't charge families who lose infants. Part of the reason is that he lost his own baby. Lerner said some funeral directories stay in the business because it gives them one last thing they can do for a deceased friend. As baby boomers aged and began planning funerals, being confronted with mortality led many to begin expressing wishes for their own funerals, Lerner said. Years ago, people would just call when someone would pass, Siegert said. Today, there's what they call pre-need. They'll sit down and they'll tell us what they want. Siegert remembers when he and his father, Gene, first began hearing about pre-planned funerals. We thought, we can't ask people to come in and pre-plan their funeral, Siegert said. Do we really want to ask families if they want to plan their own funerals? But now, people want to come in and be informed, which I think is smart. About one-third of the arrangements made with Leonard Funeral Home are made ahead of time. Siegert estimates that figure is close to half at Eaglehorse, Siegert, and Casper. Plans can be made without the emotional or time constraints that are unavoidable when decisions have to be made by grieving families in the days after a loss. There is no loved one who will be left behind that will not appreciate having been a little bit of direction in the midst of what likely will be one of the most difficult times of their lives, Schumacher said in an email. Beyond the funeral, people also plan for their final resting places. The staff at Lancaster, Wisconsin Monument Company often hear from people who want to purchase monuments ahead of time. I would say 65% of my monument sales a year are from pre-planners, said branch manager Denise Hirsch. It's a way that can spare their loved ones from anxiety and inconvenience. Schumacher said there are three main reasons why someone should consider funding their funerals ahead of time. One, they have no immediate family left, or those remaining are not capable of handling the details. Number two, if they are concerned about running out of money, or three, if they want peace of mind. Shifting tones, enduring value. What Siegert hears more and more that after a loss, many want to celebrate the life of their loved one. The phrase celebration of life has a different connotation than funeral. It's often used to describe even traditional services as a tone signifier and a reflection of the growing view of funerals as opportunities to focus on love and fond memories instead of the dark, somber cloud of grief. Some gatherings really do take on the trappings of a celebration. This summer, Eaglehorse, Siegert, and Casper began offering farewell toasts to better serve families who aren't looking for a somber visitation. Hospice of Dubuque provides grief support and bereavement services in the community, including to those who haven't had any loved ones in care. The bereavement program includes support groups, one-on-one visits, and mailed-out resources, coordinator Mary Boot said. In a way, that shift in the phrase to celebrate life can really help to provide that healing process, Boot said. But grief is a highly individual and shifting process. Sometimes the old standby traditions are just as helpful. Some people really need that traditional funeral, that traditional wake or visitation where they have the line of family members, Boots said. Some people need that open casket that have closure. Reverend Kristen Johnson Largan has been to many funerals over the years. She has a similar perspective, noting the value of both somber and light gatherings. It's important for both of those things, she said. People need to have a place where they can express their sorrow and their grief. But in the Christian tradition, we envelop all of that in the larger context of God's love and our trust and belief in the resurrection. For some of those who lost someone early in the pandemic, not being able to hold a funeral or memorial service was almost like another blow, Boots said. That is our tradition. We have that funeral or that memorial service usually within the first few weeks of the loss, she said, to wrap our brain around we're going to have to delay that or we can't do it right now was really devastating for people. Funerals, in many cases, serve as built-in support mechanisms for the grieving. If we look outside the family, it's an opportunity for the community to show support for that family and to pay respect for that person that passed away, Boots said. In the Christian context, funerals serve several roles, Largan said. On the one hand, it brings a family together, she said. It allows for publicly saying goodbye to someone, right? It's commending them into God's hands. Remembering and honoring the dead doesn't end with the initial gatherings. Many visit the graves of loved ones as part of the healing process, Boots said. For those who have been cremated, First Congregational Church in Dubuque offers columbariums in the form of artistic art crosses hanging on the church courtyard wall. People like the simplicity of it, and they like the idea of having their remains in a place that is full of life, said Reverend Lillian Daniel. A funeral is a moment in time, Daniel said, but deciding where to mark a grave is a decision for the future. There is something nice about having an actual place where the remains are so that people can come back, she said. Another way to honor those they have lost is memorial benches, Hurst said. All throughout Dubuque, arboretum and botanical gardens are similar remembrances, bricks, benches, and memorial trees. The paid memorials help support the arboretum, and people often return for casual picnics or to mark important dates and anniversaries, said Executive Director Sandy Helgerson. People find a lot of comfort in it, she said. Nobody wants to be forgotten. This is a very personal way to let that name and story be out for all those to see and enjoy.
Police, local brain health calls on rise. Dubuque's interim chief says pandemic has exacerbated existing issues. Dubuque police this year have experienced a marked increase in calls related to matters of brain health of people in crisis. The departments received 519 such calls from January 1st to October 12th, according to the latest data available. That already represents a 15% increase over the full average of 451 brain health related calls from 2016 to 2020. On a single day this past July, the department received 13 such calls, noted Interim Police Chief Jeremy Jensen. However, he said, officers also are being a success getting people connected with the resources they need to help with brain health issues. There's definitely a need, Jensen said. If there's a gap in that system, then those people fall through the cracks. Calls initially are considered to be related to brain health when a person reports that he or she is in a crisis, or if a family member or another person believes someone needs help, Jensen said. An officer also can report a suspected brain health issue. However, Jensen noted that the department doesn't necessarily classify a call based on what was called in our reported, called in or reported. That information is used as an officer tries to determine if a brain health issue is present and to see what services an individual needs. An exact reason for the recent rise in brain health calls can't be pinned down, he said, but the COVID-19 pandemic likely is playing some role. Things were there before, but the pandemic exasperated some things and brought some things to the surface, Jensen said. But it's complicated. If we could figure out exactly where this was coming from, that would be awesome. Jensen shared more detailed statistics on the 519 brain health related calls through October 12th. The calls related to 353 individual people. Jensen noted that some people might call multiple times a day or over the course of several days. Of the total calls, 51% resulted in an individual getting help at a hospital, and 23% resulted in no further action taken, Jensen said. About 9% resulted in a committal for mental health or substance abuse reasons. Jensen said committals occur if people present an imminent danger to themselves or others. Another 11% resulted in an arrest, but Jensen noted that not all brain health issues might be documented or tracked in such if that individual was part of alleged criminal activity. Jensen added that the department has increased partnering with Hillcrest Family Services on calls. Thanks to Hillcrest Mobile Crisis Services, he said, 10% of those calls this year have ended up involving Hillcrest, and he expects the number to continue increasing. Platteville, Wisconsin Police Chief Doug McKinley said his department consistently monitors the number of brain health related calls it receives. One trend the department sees is people repeatedly calling to report brain health issues. There's a broad acceptance that we can do better and we need to do better, but everybody involved in the process, he said. In addition to Hillcrest, Jensen said, Dubuque Police have worked with the Dubuque County Sheriff Department Community Foundation of Greater Dubuque and Dubuque's hospitals on getting individuals in crisis the help they need. We're definitely seeing the rewards, he said. Sometimes it's more long-term between calls, and maybe they never need to call. Jensen added that all Dubuque officers receive crisis intervention training, though a team of 10 have volunteered to do a 40-hour advanced training to be even more specialized in areas of crisis. Those on the crisis intervention team often follow up with the people who have been the subject of brain health calls to make sure they are doing okay or are receiving the right treatment, Jensen said. Having an officer to trust or a familiar face can make a person feel more comfortable seeking further help, he said. We're seeing some success, he said, but we have got to stay tenacious. We've got to stay at it and not give up.
With $4.2 million grant, Dubuque continues residential lead remediation efforts. The funding will support a program that remediates homes that contain lead hazards, including painted windowsills and walls. Dubuque officials seek to continue getting lead out of the community with a new $4.2 million grant. The city council members recently unanimously approved accepting a lead hazard control and healthy homes program grant from the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, funding the city's lead removal program for the next 3.5 years. The program remediates residents that have lead hazards, including lead paint-coated windowsills, walls, and ceilings. With a new grant, a total of about $26 million in federal funding will have been administered to the Dubuque program since its inception in 1997. By October 2022, the city will have remediated 1,400 households. However, the city still has a long way to go. Alex Steger, the city's director of housing and community development, said about 19,000 homes in Dubuque were constructed before 1978, the year the federal government banned consumer use of lead-based paints. Dwayne Haggerty, president and CEO of Heritage Works, said the city's age and high prevalence of historic homes means it has a high proportion of households with lead hazards. Dubuque has a high percentage of homes that were constructed before World War II, Haggerty said. All the paint that was used back then had lead in it. The city's lead remediation program prioritizes homes with young children, along with targeting low and moderate income residents. With the additional funding, city officials anticipate they will remediate about 105 homes over the next 42 months. Under federal guidelines, each remediation project must cost less than $25,000. While this allows the city to increase the number of homes it addresses, the drawback is that most of the homes are not entirely abated of lead, Steger says. Instead, remaining lead is painted over and effectively sealed, but these homes eventually will need to be remediated again. We have some homes that we worked on in the 90s that need work again because the paint has chipped away, Steger said. There are some exceptions. Through special request by the City Housing Department, 15 homes have been approved by HUD for more significant projects, which Steger described as lead monsters, estimated to cost about $40,000 each. They are big, historic homes that have significant more lead than we usually do, she said. This is the first time we are actually working on these homes. City Council member Danny Sprang said the program works to make the city safer and keep children from being poisoned by lead. I don't think people realize how much lead is in the city, he said. It's definitely something I'm glad we're working on. Lead removal program. Anyone interested in learning more about Dubuque's lead removal program who wants to apply for lead remediation at a residence can do so at bit.ly/3M3DW2R. I'm going to say that again. bit.ly/3M3DW2R.
News in brief. Dubuque man pleads guilty to several charges from shots fired burglarly. A Dubuque man recently pleaded guilty to several charges stemming from a 2019 burglary during which gunshots were fired. Antonio J. Rogers, 33, of Dubuque, entered the plea in Iowa District Court of Dubuque County to charges of second-degree burglary, intimidation with a dangerous weapon, and assault with a dangerous weapon. He initially was charged with first-degree burglary, but is pleading guilty to the lesser included offense. If the plea deal is accepted, charges of first-degree robbery and assault while participating in a felony would be dismissed. Rogers' plea documents recommend a sentence of 2 to 5 years of probation. His sentencing hearing is set for December 6th. Court documents state that police responded to 2233 Jackson Street after gunshots were reported on March 15, 2019. A man went to the residence after its owner received an alert from her home security system. He saw two people in the apartment, and the suspects shot multiple times when confronted by the man and his sons. No one was injured. The homeowners reported a $500 belt missing. Investigators used surveillance camera footage to identify the burglars as Rogers and Michael L. Brown, 41, of Dubuque, documents state. Brown previously entered an Elford plea of guilty to a charge of third-degree burglary. Such a plea is not an admission of guilt, but the defendant acknowledges that sufficient evidence for conviction exists. Brown was sentenced to 5 years of probation, including 1 year of a residential treatment facility. Dubuque man found guilty by jury for inappropriately touching enticing girl. An injury last week found a Dubuque man guilty of inappropriately touching a child and enticing the child to come outside her residence. Enoch Alvenga, 26, of Dubuque, was found guilty in Iowa District Court of Dubuque County of enticing a minor and indecent contact with a child. Alvarenga's trial began Tuesday, and the jury verdict was filed Thursday. Court documents state that Alvarenga inappropriately touched a girl in the summer of 2020 at a Dubuque residence, then enticed her to come to the backyard of the residence. The girl was younger than 10 years old at that time, fled back into the house. The Telegraph Herald does not provide identifying information for victims of sexual crimes. Alvarenga's trial began Tuesday, and the jury verdict was filed Thursday. Court documents state that Alvarenga inappropriately touched the girl in the summer of 2020. The traffic camera footage showed a man identified as Alvarenga walking around the area of the girl's residence at the time of the incident. Alvarenga's sentencing hearing is set for December 15th.
Other view. Vote for workforce conservation bond. The Dubuque County Land and Water Legacy Bond presents a real opportunity to support recruitment efforts on a local level. According to a 2019 study by the Iowa Economic Development Authority, when describing their ideal vacation destination and place to live, adults consistently cited outdoor activities and recreation as key to that decision. This investment in parks and recreation are key to demonstrating our high quality of life to potential new residents. If the measure passes, Dubuque County could bond for up to $40 million to implement the county parks master plan, which will invest in these kinds of quality of life amenities across the county. To demonstrate the value of a well-funded county recreation system that integrates with our municipalities and addresses desired quality of life amenities, consider one of the most sought-after aspects of the plan: improved educational opportunities throughout our parks. The vision described in the plan is a world-class outdoor education that engages and exposes all of Dubuque's elementary students to the outdoors. When we talk about quality of life, it can be difficult at times to put that into real-world context. How will trail improvements encourage more residents to move here? How will upgraded pavilions and camping grounds really contribute to population's growth? Families want excellent education systems and outdoor recreation opportunities. Young professionals want hiking and biking trails. These are the amenities that matter and that today's workforce demands from their place of choice. The massive supply chain shortage is not limited to goods, but also to workers, and employers are experiencing an unsustainable strain on their businesses. Dubuque County is no exception. Workforce issues are prevalent before the pandemic, with historically low unemployment, and COVID-19 created a new challenge that went beyond unemployment to actual loss of our labor shed. In Dubuque County, at the height of the pandemic, we had 8,000 fewer individuals actively seeking employment than before the pandemic. Now, as we emerge from what we hope has been the worst of the pandemic, the county remains nearly 2,000 employees short from the pre-pandemic levels. If Dubuque is to continue its trajectory of economic growth, we must attract new individuals to the area in order to sustain future growth. As the global competition for talent continues to increase, Dubuque must meet that moment with investments across the board that support the ability to live, work, and play right here in Dubuque. A yes vote in that county conservation bond referendum is a yes vote for workforce, attracting, keeping, and welcoming new people to our area.
You are listening to the Dubuque Telegraph Herald on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicapped. Your reader is Marge
and Helen.
And if you have any comments on this or any IRIS program, please call 243-6833 or toll free at 877-404-4747. And don't forget, this and many IRIS programs are available from our website at iowaradioreading.org. Now we return to the Telegraph Herald. We have the obituaries now. Kathleen D. Bakey from Surprise, Arizona. Kathleen K. Diane Bakey, 76, formerly of East Dubuque, Illinois, and Delhi, Iowa, passed away on Tuesday, September 28th, 2021, in Surprise, Arizona. A visitation will be from 9 a.m. to 12 p.m. on October 30th, 2021, at Leonard Funeral Home and Crematory, 2595 Rockdale Road in Dubuque, Iowa. Burial will follow at Holy Family, New Mallory Church Cemetery. She was born on August 5th, 1945, in Dubuque, Iowa, to Arnold and Frances Wickman Schneider. Kay loved her family unconditionally and really loved the time she got to spend with grandchildren and great-grandchildren and watching them grow through pictures and FaceTime. She enjoyed playing cards, water aerobics, dominoes, traveling around the countryside and tending to her beautiful plants and watching hummingbirds. She had a secret recipe to attract them. She also loved Sisters' Day with her sisters once a year. She enjoyed visiting her Sunflower Resort friends and her John Deere bicycle. Kay started going to Arizona in 1995 as a snowbird, where she loved so much. where she loved it so much, she became an Arizona resident. Kay is survived by her husband, Gene Mud Bakery, Bakey, of Surprise, Arizona, her three sons, Jim, Jane Bakey of Sherrill, Iowa, Jeff, Nancy Bakey of East Dubuque, and Bill Bakey of Dubuque. Her grandchildren, Luke Bakey, Jesse, Courtney Bakey of Dubuque, Jenna, Jeremy Frederick of Princeton, Minnesota, Levi Bakey, Rachel Bakey, and Gabby Bakey of Dubuque, as well as their great-grandchildren, Charles Miles, Baby Boy Bakey, to arrive in March, Aubrey and Ailey Bakey, Joseph and Julian Frederick, her brother Mike, Sally Schneider of Dubuque, her godson Chad Schneider of Dubuque, and her in-laws, Lynn Snit, Sint, Mary Schneider, and Richard Kaiko Bakey, Juanita Bakey, John Ruth Bakey, Mike Breen, Mark Beckman, and Gary Smith, along with numerous nieces and nephews. Kay is preceded in death by her parents, Arnold and Frances, her daughter Lisa, 1964, her brothers Charlie, Ed, and Steve Schneider, and her sisters Jan Legovin, Elaine Sint, Mary Schneider, and her in-laws Gerald Bakey, Mary Breen, and Darlene Beckman. A special thanks to the staff at Boswell Medical Center in Sun City, Arizona, for taking care of Kay. Kay is not physically here anymore, but her love and life, her love and light live on for, pardon me, but her love and light live on forever. She will be loved and forever in our hearts.
LaVon Morrow. LaVon Morrow, age 91, of Verona, formerly of Lancaster, passed away on Monday, October 18th, 2021, at the University of Wisconsin Hospitals and Clinics in Madison. She was born on March 4th, 1930, to Earl and Pearl McConnell Kennedy in Janesville, Wisconsin. She married Virgil A. Morrow on August 23rd, 1961, at St. Patrick's Catholic Church in Benton, Wisconsin. He preceded her in death on October 20th, 1993. LaVon graduated from Benton High School and over the years took many art and jewelry classes at UW-Platteville. She worked at Savannah Ordnance Depot until her marriage. Together, they farmed the Morrow Century Farm. After Virgil's death, LaVon continued to run and maintain the farm to the present. In addition to the work on the farm, she turned to her painting and became involved in the Lancaster Art Club and the Wisconsin Rural Artists Association. After several years, she was awarded the John Stuart Curry Memorial Medal for promoting art in Wisconsin. Over the years, she won awards for her painting on being the first prize for Great River Road Contest, which involved 10 states and two Canadian provinces. She has taught oil painting classes spring and fall for local artists for over 35 years. LaVon also worked in porcelain painting and designing and manufacturing original jewelry while wintering in California after Virgil's death. She loved cooking, using all the homegrown produce from her garden. LaVon would change and improve the recipes and share them with all who she asked. She particularly enjoyed her hickory nut cookies and English toffee. There was one exception, though. It was her secret recipe for hot mustard, which she shared with only one friend and permitted her to adapt the recipe for marketing. LaVon enjoyed all big family gatherings and wanted to know what all the nieces and nephews were doing, playing cards, going to plays and movies, and traveling. She and fellow artists took many trips to the UK and Europe, staying at B&Bs and doing sketching and painting. LaVon was an optimist, always seeing the irony and humor in the situation, and took many humorous stories and told many humorous stories about the happenings around her. Survivors include her great-granddaughters, Haley Morrow Jones and Nicole LaVon Morrow, great-great-grandchildren, Savannah Jones, Cyrus Jones, Zachariah Morrow, Lazarus Morrow, and Lyric LaVon Morrow, several nieces, nephews, and other relatives and friends. In addition to her parents and husband, Virgil LaVon was preceded in death by a son and daughter-in-law, Jerry and Nancy Morrow, granddaughter Anne, and her siblings, Evelyn Havertape, Phoebe McCrea, John Kennedy, and Bernard Kennedy, and numerous sisters and brothers-in-law. A massive Christian burial will be held Thursday, October 28, 2021, at 11 a.m. at St. Clement Catholic Church in Lancaster, with Father William Vernon and Father Bernard Kennedy, OFM, officiating. Burial will be in Little Grand Cemetery, Little Grand Township. Family and friends may call on Wednesday, October 27th, from 4 till 7 p.m. at Martin Schwartz Funeral Home and Crematory in Lancaster, and on Thursday from 10 a.m. until time of services at the church. Those in attendance will be required to wear a mask and practice social distancing. The church will be live-streamed on the funeral home's face page. In lieu of plants and flowers, memorials will be given in LaVon's name to the Benton Community Fund, P.O. Box 253, Benton, Wisconsin, 53803. LaVon's family wishes to thank Doreen Starrett, Noel Manor in Verona, UW Hospitals and Clinics, and LaVon's friends and neighbors in Wisconsin and California.
Barbara A. Dagg of Piazza, Iowa. Barbara A. Dagg, 79, of Piazza, Iowa, completed her earthly journey peacefully among family on Tuesday, October 19th, 2021, at her home in Piazza, Iowa. Visitation for Barbara will be held from 3 to 8 p.m. on Monday, October 25th, 2021, at the Rife Funeral Home at 894 Piazza Street, Piazza, Iowa. Visitation also will be held after 8:30 a.m. on Tuesday at the funeral home. To honor Barbara's life, a massive Christian burial will be held at 10 a.m. Tuesday, October 26, 2021, at St. Joseph the Worker Church in Dubuque, Iowa, with Reverend Jim Guerin officiating. Burial will follow in Holy Family Cemetery, New Mallory, Piazza, Iowa. She was born September 4, 1942, in Dubuque, Iowa, daughter of Jerome Whitey and Pauline Fry Henkel. Barb was a proud lifetime Dubuque area resident. She received her education at St. Patrick's School in Dubuque and was a member of the first graduating class from Wallert High School in 1960 in Dubuque. On October 14, 1961, she was united in marriage to Robert Dagg at St. Patrick's Church in Dubuque. Barb was blessed and grateful to have celebrated 60 years of marriage with the love of her life. They shared a life filled with joy that only occurs when the person you fall in love with and marry also just happened to be your best friend. She was a receptionist, a clerk, and medical transcriptionist at Medical Associates for over 35 years. She then finished out her career in medical administration, serving as the office manager at Dubuque Anesthetics, retiring after 12 years. Barb lost her battle with cancer despite a brave and valiant fight. She was a beloved wife, mother, grandmother, aunt, and friend. She was a kind, loving, and caring to all. She had uniquely humble confidence in her abilities and loved sharing her skills at teaching others. She was a member of the St. Joseph the Worker Parish in Dubuque, and those left behind to cherish the memory of Barb include her husband, Robert Dodd, of Piasta, Iowa, three children, Carrie, Kevin, Hasten of Buffalo, New York, Kevin Michelle Dogg of Canton, Georgia, and Amy Randall Elkman of Katy, Texas. Six grandchildren, Ryan, Justin, Colin, and Cameron Hansen, and Zachary and Jessica. Jessica Alkman. Two siblings, Beth Ellen Wagner of Muscatine, Iowa, and Paula Baker of Dubuque, Iowa. Brothers and sisters-in-law, Janet Westhoff of Dubuque, Iowa, Lyle Juanita Dogg, and Lois Mark Elric, both of Dubuque, Iowa, Richard Sharon Dogg, John Dogg, Barbara Jim Schuller of Cheryl Bound, Stephen Dogg of Dubuque, Iowa, Kathleen Gissel, and Monica Rick Soapy, both of Jewett, Iowa. She is preceded in death by her parents, one brother, Terry Henkel, and brothers and sisters-in-law, Madonna Clarence McMahon, John Westhoff, Nancy Dogg, and Danny Gissel. The family wishes to extend their thanks to the many friends and neighbors who made Barb's final month happy ones, and to Hospice of Dubuque for all the kind and compassionate assistance and care. In lieu of flowers, donations may be given to Hospice of Dubuque in memory of Barbara Dogg. An online video tribute may be viewed and online condolences left for the family at www.rafefuneralhomeincorporated.com.
Grace M. Schultz. Grace Marie Schultz, 90, of Luxembourg, Iowa, passed away Thursday, October 21st, surrounded by family at Dubuque Specialty Care in Dubuque, Iowa. Visitation will be held from 2 to 8 p.m. Tuesday, October 26, 2021, at Kramer Funeral Home, 750 12th Avenue Southwest in Dyersville. Visitation will continue Wednesday from 9 to 10 a.m. at the funeral home prior to Mass. A Mass of Christian burial will be held at 11 a.m. Wednesday, October 27th, at Holy Trinity Catholic Church in Luxembourg, with burial to follow in the church cemetery. Reverend Noah Dim will officiate. Grace was born on September 20th, 1931, in Luxembourg, Iowa, daughter of Edward and Agatha Clemen Lake. She attended Holy Trinity School in Luxembourg, and she married Jerome Jerry Schultz on April 23, 1951, at Holy Trinity Catholic Church in Luxembourg. Together, they farmed North Luxembourg on the farm that Jerry was born and raised. Jerry and Grace were married 65 years before Jerry's death on August 6, 2016. Grace was active in her faith, especially her devotion to the rosary. She was talented in quilting, sewing, and crocheting. Mom always had a big, fruitful garden. She was a hard-working farm wife and worked side by side with Jerry. She was honored to be part of the legacy of Schultz Farms, which started in 1870 by Nicholas Schultz, Jerry's grandfather. She was very proud to see her sons, grandchildren, family work the farm. She was a simple person who enjoyed little things in life. Mom was always happy and content to be at home. Family was very important to Grace. She enjoyed visiting with her children, grandchildren, and great-great-grandchildren, who affectionately referred to as Grandma Grace. She was a member of Holy Trinity Catholic Church the Rosary Society, the Church Choir, and the Luxembourg Quilting Group. She will be greatly missed by her family and all who knew and loved her. Survivors include her 5 children, Jim, Sharon Schultz of Luxembourg, Sandy, Lyle, Wolfakul of Farley, Joe Schultz of Luxembourg, and Linda Terry Brockenstedt of Luxembourg, and Lisa Scott Lucan of Worthington. Her 13 grandchildren, Jesse, Tim, Kelly, and Tony Schultz, Amy, Anthony, Dowies, Jeff, Mary Lynn, and Scott, Shyla K., Wolfka, Abby, Luke McDermott, Luke, Jenny, and Andy Lynn Brockenstedt, Katie, Justin Weber, Jenna Lucan, Jared, Michaela Klosterman, and Jessica Lucan. 22 great grandchildren. A great long list. And she is preceded in death by her parents, 2 brothers, James and Edward Lake, and in-laws, Ed Schultz, Bill Bessler, Floyd Klosterman, and Jermaine Schultz. The family would like to thank the staff at Riverbend Assisted Living, Memory Care, Dubuque Specialty Care, and Hospice of Dubuque for their compassionate care. Online condolences may be left for the family at www.kramerfuneral.com.
Edward J. Lynch, 74, of Dubuque, died Saturday, October 23, 2021. Visitation will be held from 4 to 7 p.m. Tuesday, October 26th, at Hoffman Schneider and Kitchen Funeral Home and Crematory. Mass of Christian Burial will be held at 10 a.m. Wednesday, October 27th at St. Anthony's Catholic Church. Burial will be in Mount Carmel Cemetery.
James Dunwoody. James L. Dunwoody, 85, of Dubuque, Iowa, passed away on October 22nd, 2021 at Stonehill Care Center. Visitation will be from 12:30 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. Monday, October 25th at Leonard Funeral Home and Crematory on 2595 Rockdale Road. A graveside service with burial will be at 3 p.m. Monday at Dubuque Memorial Gardens. Jim was born on June 18, 1936, son of George and Margaret Greenwood Dunwoody. He married Bonnie L. Coyle on August 2, 1958 at St. Raphael Cathedral in Dubuque. She preceded him in death. Jim was a construction worker his entire life. Jim was a loving family man and was always ready to help others. He enjoyed photography and taking many pictures and movies of family and friends. He enjoyed spending time with his family, fishing, camping, spending time at the park, and having a few beers while watching old movies. Jim was a very good cook, and the kitchen was always open, even for late-night homemade pizzas and munchies. In his later years, he loved to drive around town and point out all the places he helped to build from his construction days. He was a kind of man who would give you the shirt off his back and the shoes from his feet. He is survived by his son, Steve Michelle Dunwoody, and the children, Lindsay and Ryan Dunwoody, all of Melbourne, Florida. Kim Dunwoody of Dubuque and their children, Stephanie, Ellis of Leander, Texas, and Logan and Tyler Dunwoody of Dubuque. Jim was preceded in death by his parents, his wife Bonnie, his daughter Lori, his sisters Jean Lay and Joan Beaver. The family would like to thank Hospice of Dubuque and Stonehill Care Center for all their wonderful care they gave him.
That brings us to the end of today's reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for October 25th, 2021. I'm your reader, Marge.
And Helen.
And support for this reading comes from the DuPaco R.W. Heffer Foundation. The Telegraph Herald can be heard each weekday at 2 p.m. All programs heard on IRIS are intended solely for the blind and print handicapped. If you have any questions or comments on this or any IRIS program, please call our office toll-free at 877-404-4747. And thanks for listening.